Blog Talk Radio.
Coronavirus be damned, it is the Charlotte line, and we are not budging. Dr. John, live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, where the spring breakers are pouring in en masse. It's unbelievable.
Are
they? I don't care. Yes, they are. Walmart neighborhood market near me almost ran out of food today. They weren't prepared for all the spring breakers just filing in. And what I can tell you is down in Florida, Governor DeSantis is having to close beaches because they're concerned about it. So, you know, here's the deal. We're all going to be around here. They're not going to close anything until after spring break because 70% of all of the sales tax revenue of South Carolina comes from Myrtle Beach. So they're going to wait. We've had no curfews, no anything happening down here in the sun and fun capital of the world. And it really is. And I'm so glad everyone's coming down here to have a good time. They need to get the heck out of here, and then we need to shut everything down and try not to give anyone the coronavirus. So anyway, it's good to be here. It's good to be here with my buddies. We're going to have a great time tonight. And from Des Moines, Iowa, from the home of the Iowa Speedway, who are you? What's your name?
That's a Jackie Chan thing. Who are you?
Who are you?
Well, I guess I'm introducing myself. It's Brady Vansickle from Des Moines. Hello.
We have to do things a little differently because we're under a coronavirus attack. What more can we say? Glad to have you here, Brady. It's always good. And I hear you're now working from home.
Yeah, we're officially in quarantine up here in Des Moines. There's been several cases, including a former employer of mine that I used to work at a couple of years ago. They had 4 confirmed cases in their office building. So,
wow.
Yeah, we're a little shut down up here in Des Moines. So I've got a nice little. Literally sitting next to my makeshift desk in my bedroom, so it's gonna be we're gonna be roughing it for a couple weeks.
Let me ask you: are you warm inside that house and taking good care? And you're gonna be around with us for years to come, right?
Oh, I'll be fine. Actually, it's pretty nice up here because we're starting to get into the spring times. It's getting to flirting around the mid-50s around here in Iowa, so we're thawing a little bit. So at least we can open the house while we're suffering in quarantine. So there's silver lining to everything.
That's good. Well, we're glad to have you with us tonight. And the newly
one quick thing. Brady now can just sit around.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, Brady can now just sit around in his underwear and not get in trouble with HR. That's all I wanted to say.
Honestly, it's all I've ever asked for in a job. It's literally the one thing I've always asked for from a job, and I can finally live out my fantasy. So there's also a silver lining there.
All right.
I just wanted to get that out there. Sorry.
I was trying to keep it PG, Zach, but that's okay.
Hey, that's PG.
And now, the newly tattooed, and you got to tell us all about it, Zach Beechler from Studio G. How you doing tonight, buddy? We're glad you're here.
Well, technically it's Studio C. I'm driving back. Yes, I got a tattoo today with my friend Danielle. I just dropped her off, and I'm still doing the podcast about 5 minutes from home, but it is fantastic. It hurt like a son of a gun, I will tell you that. I got it. Brady has seen it, and John has now seen it. I got the country of Japan on my right forearm, which I didn't think that through because now I can't wear a wristwatch for a couple days.
And honestly, it came out looking really, really great. Your tattoo artist did a very nice job of making sure the lines were really crisp, and it was just really well sketched out. The colors pop really nice on it. She did a fantastic job.
I asked
Zach if it was your arm, your leg, or your nose. And you said it was your arm. What'd you say it was? Your leg? Your arm. Was it your nose? What was it?
It was my right forearm.
Okay, great. So now we know. So it wasn't your nose?
Now
we know.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was trying to be funny. Anyway, yeah, I'm going to start tonight. I have a local yokel story from Myrtle Beach. I have a very good friend. His name is Greg, and he's former owner of Fox 43 Television here in Myrtle Beach. And whenever he sees anything that involves what I'm doing, I always get a letter in the mail with a copy of the newspaper article. And that's a good friend, you know. He's one of these guys that he'll mail it to you. So what it was, and I had mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, because I think maybe I heard the news before it was really out, but the newspaper, the Sun News, which, by the way, is going bankrupt and had to be sold here in Myrtle Beach, had last week, believe it or not, just last week, it had a headline that reads, "Local Speedway's Future Hinges on Rezoning Request." And I want to read this story so that everybody knows about this great, this legendary track in Myrtle Beach that might be no longer. We'll see. Here's what the story by Alan Blondin. And I know Alan. He's a pretty good guy. He's a pretty thorough guy. So if he wrote this, I feel good about it. And it says, ladies and gentlemen, Myrtle Beach Speedway is under contract to a developer that would turn the iconic short track into a commercial and housing development if a forthcoming zoning request is approved. Speedway owner Bob Lutz, now he's from Charlotte, said Tuesday that he has a sales contract with a developer based in Charlotte that will very soon be submitting a rezoning request to Horry County. Lutz said the property is zoned for commercial development and the sale is contingent upon the zoning request being passed by Horry County Council to allow the residential element to be built. Now, I'll stop there and say this. Myrtle Beach Speedway can get loud. Brady, you know how a short how loud a short track can get, right?
Oh, yeah. No, there's nothing louder than a short track, especially if it's anywhere close to a residential area. Like the one in Newton, we're just maybe about a mile or so outside the outer edge of the town. We've got a little dirt track out there. We do go-kart racing, not even stock cars, just little go-karts. And, man, you can hear those for...
How about if I said the phrase 200 yards, 600 feet? Oh, my goodness. It is loud as all get out, and get out can be pretty darn loud. So anyway, now we'll go back to this. The Speedway will remain open and continue to host a regular racing schedule and special events for the foreseeable future, Lutz said, at least until a rezoning is passed. Events include Horry County Fair from April 24th to May 3rd, the Myrtle Beach Nationals, formerly NOPI Nationals, drifting, concerts, and monster trucks. Well, now, I don't think so with all the coronavirus and everything being shut down and canceled except the beach in Myrtle Beach. And he said he had a developer interested in the property. And... but it's contingent on that developer getting the land rezoned. We all know it's a long process, and sometimes they go through and sometimes they don't. So we're operating the facility on a normal basis as if nothing's going to change except coronavirus. So, you know, it's a little bit of a mess. And the track is slightly longer than a half a mile. It's hosted the NASCAR Cup Series in its early years and NASCAR's Secondary Busch Series, now the Xfinity Series, annually, as late as 2000. It's hosted many of NASCAR's top names over the years and was the home track of Dale Earnhardt Jr. early in his racing. Now, that's a heck of a thing to be able to say. It really is. Lutz said that attendance at the track has waned. They haven't been able to turn a profit with the property in recent years. And he's brought in other events in an attempt to supplement the racing losses. Well, I must say this. I had booked Maestro from WCW, the famed professional wrestler, to come down. And he was going to be the star of movie night because they have a... They have kind of a building in the middle of the track where they show movies, and it's kind of like in the 50s. It's a lot of fun. And so I brought Maestro down on that fabled Saturday, and I was met by the track manager who said, well, I don't know what happened, but management took the event down from Facebook, so no one's coming. And I said, oh, my goodness. I didn't know what to say other than, Maestro, can I buy you lunch at Ruby Tuesdays? So that's what I did. It was kind of strange. Seemed as though there was a little bit of confusion throughout between Charlotte and Myrtle Beach. But it's a great track. And frankly, I hope they don't get it rezoned. And frankly, I hope those people have to put up with all the great noise from a short track. What say you, Zach and Brady? What do you think about my death wish for that deal? What do you think?
Well,
honestly, you really hate to see another speedway in jeopardy of going under. And anything we can do to see it, you know, maybe continue on, especially a track like Myrtle Beach that has so much history, so much prestige. You've seen so many big names. You mentioned it, like Dale Earnhardt Jr., his father before him, his father before him, that made their names, cutting their teeth, racing around a small track like Myrtle Beach. You don't want to see them go under because they become part of a community's lifeblood. But then again, in the society we live at, where progress is the future and anything to make a short buck, you got to move aside for capitalism sometimes in these deals, and that really sucks. I mean, I don't know what the way forward is going to be, but I really hope they can hold on and we can save another speedway out there.
I'm going to say something, and then I'm going to ask Zach his opinion. All those people that live right behind that track, that track was there long before that development was built, and they knew absolutely what they were getting into when they bought those houses.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm sorry, but I will stand up in coronavirus fashion and point right at him and say, you knew what you were getting into. Zach,
there wasn't any
when
mystery.
When you did something and you knew the consequences, you really couldn't complain about it, could you?
I could, but then people would just be like, well, you kind of knew. That's the sad part about a lot of these tracks.
You're right.
It's true. It's true. It's the sad part about a lot of these tracks, and what happens is, you know, they see that there's land available and they'll buy it, and then they'll do stuff with, like, such as build houses, build shopping centers and such like that. The sad thing is then they turn around and blame the tracks, and then it's like, okay, well, then they shut down the track. And then you have people, there's some younger people that will then take that and be like, okay, well, I'll just go race on the streets or drive illegally or do stupid stuff. And then it's like, well, they need this outlet. And then it comes full circle. It's like, well, remember what you did, like, I don't know, a couple months ago? So it is sad and it sucks because that track has so much history, not just in the local Myrtle Beach, but in racing history, in NASCAR, and with the names of Earnhardt, like you said. You know, I recently listened to Junior talk about, you know, his adventures going down to Myrtle Beach and racing at Myrtle Beach Speedway and how he snuck in through the trailer and snuck in and did this. It's sad because there's so many great stories from other drivers and other people that will possibly be lost because of this.
Well,
you know, it's sad, and I hate it.
And you're right, and I'm going to jump in and say this, because I've lived here for 22 years. Myrtle Beach is a gigantic part of history for so many millions of people on the East Coast and everywhere in the world, for that matter. And, you know, every time you turn around, something's getting torn apart, redeveloped, or whatever. In case you have not been down to Myrtle Beach, you got to come down. And assuming coronavirus goes away, you can get a caricature in Plyler Park from me and Cody, and then you can go to the Gay Dolphin, the largest gift shop now in the country, which has been there since 1954. And now I'm going to tell you something about the Gay Dolphin. There is some of that merchandise in there is still there from 1954. But be that as it may, it's a great place. It's historical. It brings back memories that, you know, even if you're 25 years old, you'll start having memories that people had in the 50s and the 60s, because Myrtle Beach was truly a landmark for people to come have fun, forget about life, enjoy themselves for just a little bit. And Myrtle Beach is historically beautiful. It really is. And it's got an old 50s, early 60s texture about it that doesn't seem to go away. And the Myrtle Beach Speedway, well, good Lord, it's part of the fabric of the history of Myrtle Beach. But, you know, sometimes there's nothing you can do, and who knows who paid money to the county council. I mean, you know, we say things like that down here. It doesn't matter. Who knows who's paid what to what and if it's going to happen. And all those people that don't like the Myrtle Beach Speedway because they bought a house right behind it can just forget themselves. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So anyway, I'm a big historical guy, and I hate to see history destroyed, because once you destroy history, what is it, guys? It's gone forever. So here's
exactly.
My prayers.
Draw the line.
Here's my prayers and my Sunday best for the continuation of the great and grand Myrtle Beach Speedway. It's nothing better than the Myrtle Beach Speedway, unless it is the boulevard between 10th and 9th Avenue in downtown Myrtle Beach during the summer, which is crazy busy. It's incredible. You're down there, and you just feel like you're in the early 60s. And it's a beautiful feeling. So, and I hope if something doesn't work right for this rezoning, maybe you guys can come down, we can party and have a good time in the middle of the most historic and incredible place in the universe, which is between 10th and 9th Avenue in downtown Myrtle Beach, in front of the Gay Dolphin and right next to Plyler Park. So I hope you guys can come down in the middle of the summer. We will have a blast, and you'll see why I love it so much. It makes me not want to move away from Myrtle Beach. Many times I want to, but I just can't, because it's really a part of history that will never recover. So that's my opinion. I'll let you guys, who know a lot about racing, I at least got to talk about history. And gentlemen, thank you for letting me say some good things about Myrtle Beach, because this town deserves good things said about it. Thank you.
Well, we really appreciate you sharing that with us. It was really heartfelt, and we could definitely feel the connection.
You
there.
You know, I love it.
Really great insight to the area. So we really appreciate that for us, Dr. John.
And I'll say this. When I'm down there working during that magic 100 days, I feel like I'm the king of the hill. I feel like the way those business people felt 50, 60 years ago, it's just beautiful. And I hope you can come down and enjoy it, even if it's the last summer for it. Who knows? But anyway, we'll go on. Now, what's happening, gentlemen? This is a rhetorical question, just a little bit. What's happening in racing today?
Yeah, that'd be a lot of nothing.
that was a Ric Flair. Woo! Okay.
Well, it is unfortunate because racing has been postponed. Originally, we had this weekend was going to be Atlanta Motor Speedway hosting all three series. Then they said they weren't going to have any fans. Okay, that's fine. Then they changed it to there was going to be no practice. Okay, that's odd. Then all the teams are there. Teams were actually there working on their trucks, getting them ready because they were going to be qualifying Friday night. Instead, they got the old, nope, load them up, take everything home. We're postponing everything. Originally, it was going to be for 2 weeks. We said, okay, that's no problem. Just a couple days ago, then we got the great news. Yep, we are postponing everything until May 3rd. Martinsville, Virginia will be the next race we have. So now what?
Like you said, a whole lot of nothing. Get real so quiet around here.
It's true. So instead of us just canceling the show, put on hiatus, we talked about that. And one thing we did is, well, the first thing we're going to do this show, me and Brady are going to talk about our favorite races, our favorite tracks, and a lot of our favorite stuff about racing that we've been able to experience the past, ever since we've been into racing, I guess. But another thing we are going to do, and we will mention at the end of the podcast, we're going to have a historical rewind. What that means is there's going to be races that we're going to watch, and we're going to discuss them, because they either had a historical impact of a certain driver or a significant impact of racing history. Me and Brady have already come up with 5 races because as of right now, we know for sure, well, we know for now, that we will be racing back in May 3rd. We have 6 weeks to fill until then. We will talk about those races at the end of today's show, but today we're going to talk about some of our favorite moments from that either at the track or we watched on TV, some of our favorite things at the track that we get to see or get to do while we're there. I think one of the biggest ones that me and Brady both have are tons of memories at the Iowa Speedway. Am I correct?
Oh, literally I can count just dozens upon dozens of memories that were made at the Speedway. It's literally become my second home anytime I come back to go back to my hometown of Newton. It's just will forever be a big part of my life for just all the memories I made there, all the connections, all the friends. There's just truly is no place like that. That's always the place I'm going to go to when I start talking about racing memories.
I feel like you have one of those friends still.
I know. He's a some lanky guy that I sometimes call and talk to about racing every now and then.
Oh, he's some jerk at Studio G?
Yeah,
that
something
dude?
Like that. Sounds about right.
Okay.
Stepped on my line. I was going to say Greg. Damn it. That's an inside joke. Damn it. No, yeah, that is actually how me and Brady met. I don't think – I wasn't working in racing just yet, but there were some people – we're not going to call them friends. There were some acquaintances that kind of introduced me to Brady and another friend of ours named Greg. And it just kind of took off from there that we had become friends. Anytime we were at the track, we always seen each other. In fact, at I believe one race, I stayed with Brady at was it your cousin's house or something, or your sister's house?
Yeah, it was a house that my big sister, and you just decided to crash with me. And I was like, this is okay. Let's just fucking kick it, you know?
Yeah, I was just like, hey Brady, can I come crash too? Yeah, sure. Why not?
Why not? Let's party.
Well, now, guys, I've got to tell you something very important. The last
Uh-oh.
Time a buddy of mine crashed at his friend's house. He had a lizard man sighting in Chester, South Carolina. No joke. It's in my book, Aliens, UFOs, and Anomalies. It's one of the anomalies. That's right. So now I tell you what, when you say, is it okay if I crash? You better be careful. You never know what's going to be trying to break into the garage at 2 in the morning.
The heebie-jeebies, that's for sure.
Now, it is, and everybody go to Amazon and get a copy of Aliens, UFOs, and Anomalies. Just search for John Stamey. You'll see it, and you'll see that entire story. It's a good story, too. Golly, I need to watch out. I need to have a drink because, obviously, if I don't have a drink, my mind wanders. Sorry, Zach.
Yeah, nothing
Sorry,
wrong
Brady.
With that. You're good with that.
Back to you guys.
But, yeah, we met through the Iowa Speedway. I think you were there for the opening year for the Speedway, right, Brady? Like you weren't working in the radio stuff, but you went there as an attendee, right?
Oh yeah, no, I've went to one race a year at the very bare minimum since the Speedway opened in 2006. I remember in 2006 going with my older brother, his girlfriend at the time, who's now his wife, and just thinking I was super cool because I was hanging out with my high school brother, and we went and saw it was Josh Turner, surprisingly enough, was the post-race concert after that event. I'll never forget that because it was my first concert, too. But it was just some random, you know, weekly racing series because there was no big events back then in that opening year. So I think it was something like even like a gas series, not even like an ARCA event, just something super, super local short track racing. And it was a lot of fun. But countless memories there going with my younger brother to a similar race, just a very, very low budget, you know, kind of weekly racing series. We had rain that kind of moved through all day, so it ended up running at like midnight. It was when they finally went green flag. It was super overcast, super cloudy still, but they got the race in, and it was just one of the wildest things. There was like almost a wreck almost every other lap, and the finish came down to a 4-wide finish, and my brother and I were like, this is the coolest thing ever. But arguably my favorite memory that I will always take with me was growing up, my favorite driver, my childhood hero, was Ken Schrader. And if you are a big fan of racing, you know that name. And if you tune into Dale Jr.'s podcast, you will know he's the most recent guest that was on the podcast just last week. And when I came into the sport in 2000, Schrader was the driver of the M&M's car. So I think that's what led me to being a fan of his. But I followed him from the 36 M&M's car to the 49 BAM car to eventually 2006 when he drove the 21 car for the Wood Brothers. 2006, coincidentally being the first year that Iowa Speedway opened its doors, they did a cool meet and greet promotion where they brought Ken Schrader out to do a fan day. He took pictures, signed autographs. He did a little bit of a demonstration for racing and whatnot. And my dad called me out of school and took me there, got my picture with them. I got like 4 autographs. It was a day I got to spend with my dad. I got out of school, which was just icing on top of the cake. And I'll always remember that afternoon because I got to meet my childhood hero, and it was a day spent with my actual hero, my dad. So it was It was a really cool day.
That is cool. I do remember going I do remember going there when they actually held one of the first events, which was actually the ARCA season finale. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. I do remember that. That was right there at the very beginning.
Yep, that was one of the first races they really did there. And I was there. It was cold as hell. I remember it was me, my grandmother, and my uncle. It was so odd because that was one of those things where, you know, my parents didn't go to the races. My dad's actually never been to a NASCAR race. And I'll talk about, like, my first history, my getting into racing in a little bit. But I went there, and I don't remember a whole lot from it. I remember I did a racing simulator, and then after that we went up, watched the race. I remember at one point on the front stretch there was a wreck, and they had Speedy Dry, and they ran the cars through it. And, like, my grandmother and my uncle's like, why are they doing that? That's stupid. They have the little access road. And I was just like, I'm just going to play my Game Boy because I was still into racing, but it was so cold I didn't want to be exposed to the elements. So I brought my little Game Boy to play. I still enjoyed that.
Fair.
And that is my first real memory of the Iowa Speedway, of me going. And I'd gone from all the way in high school till I graduated high school. I always went with family. It was either it was always my grandparents, I should say. And it was always fun. Got to go to the race, hang out at the track, a lot of fun. And then that summer I graduated, I started going to races by myself, and man, that was so much fun.
Honestly, I'll never forget just those 3 or 4 years in a row that you, Greg, and I, we would always meet at the tent that Greg and I would set up for our broadcast. And then we would, you know, just kind of shoot stories. You'd catch us up on some rumors going on in the garage area, some different setups and things you were hearing. But my favorite part of those times was when the race was over, you know, the track had cleared out, the haulers had gone, and you, Greg, and I would just roam the garage area, seeing what teams had left behind, just kind of seeing the carnage, you know, finding the random piece of a bumper or side skirt that was left behind, the couple of lone stray hats. It was just cool to see, you know, these little lost treasures, but also just spending time with a couple of your closest friends in an abandoned racetrack for the most part. It was always surreal, always just like, wow, this is what we get to do, you know, as friends. This is what our bonding is, and this is really, really cool. Because not a lot of people can say that, and I've always treasured those times.
Oh, I'm right there with you. I think one memory that sticks out at the Iowa Speedway was IndyCar was there. I can't remember which team was leaving, but they had left their, like, telescoping weather radar thing up.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, what? And, like, they were backing it up, and I had to wave dude. I'm like, hey, whoa. Like, the guy that was directing was like, whoa, whoa, you got your thing set up. He's like, oh, that would have been really bad. That cost a lot of money. And then he ran, got it, like, stopped the driver, and that was an odd one. But you always say, like, this, you know, us collecting the stuff. I can't tell you how many pieces of side skirt or nose cones or whatever that I got from the Iowa Speedway. I'd assume probably at least a good 30 to 40% of my collection is stuff from the Iowa Speedway, either that I got at the track or even a couple pieces I bought online because I did want them. I think one memory that always stands out, there's two of them, and they involve bumpers. The first one was, and I think you know this one, was the K&N series had run. Rico Abreu, who, if you don't know who he is a short person, he's a midget, that was running in the K&N series. He was racing, he got wrecked, and he pancaked the front of the nose, or the front of the car, and they cut the nose off. And I was able to convince the guy, hey, I just want to run and get that piece of sheet metal. Can I go get that? He looks at me, he's like, all right, hurry up, I didn't see you. I ran around, I grabbed it, and it was the old slant nose steel cars. Like, they were still running them in some of the K&N Cup races. And I tell you this, that thing was so heavy, but I still picked it up, walked it all the way around so I could get around the gate. And the guy's like, is that it? I'm like, this is it. He goes, all right, I didn't see you. Cool. Dragged
solid.
It all the way. Yeah, oh, it was solid. and I dragged it all the way to the tent. Now, the tent was probably a good, 300 feet or so away from the entrance to where the K&N cars would be parked?
I'd say that's about right, yeah.
So I dragged it, and I remember Greg saying he, because we talked about this recently, how he heard something just like, and around the corner I came with this just flat white bumper, and you guys were doing a broadcast, and he just looked at me, he's like, well, there's some fans that got a souvenir, and it's quite interesting to see this, because I just stop, and I drop the rest of it, and I'm just listening to you guys. I think that one, and the Matt Crafton, if you let me tell that one, Matt
Crafton,
go
for it.
The last year that I went to a race at the Iowa Speedway, it was it 2017? Yeah, 2017. Wow. Yes, 2017. So I was working for a team still, you know, doing all that. Well, all of a sudden, I have an opportunity to be in the garage area during the truck race. And I'm like, oh, this is good. So what do? Well, I just take advantage of that. Matt Crafton got spun and backed into the wall. Whole rear of the car is destroyed. The whole rear of the truck is destroyed, just demolished. They cut it off at the quarter panels, and the quarter panels and the bumper are still attached, along with the bumper bar and the spoiler. Never do you see that all together. Well, the guys throw it to the side, and I ask him, like, are you just going to throw that away? He goes, yeah. I'm like, can I take it? He goes, if you can carry it, you can have it. Well, challenge accepted, kind sir. I grab it, I pick it up. The guy even gives me a look like, okay. I take it around. He goes, all right. Get through security. Put it behind your guys' tent. I shot you both a photo. I'm like, hey, this is here. It's mine. No explanation, nothing else. And Greg was even like, what is this? And then I go back, and I got a couple other pieces. But then I come back in, or I come back to you guys, and you both are like, what is that? I'm like, oh, yeah, here. And I showed you, and just the awe that you both had, like, whoa. Now, the kicker to this story was, I don't have a truck. I don't have a van. I have a little Toyota Corolla. So I asked, hey, guys, can we put this, I don't know, in the back of the van so you can take it to my car? You both were like, sure. And somehow we got that bumper fitted into the back of my car. And I had to drive. By the way, at the time, I was living in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, which is about 2 hours from the track. I had to drive all the way from the Newton Speedway, the Iowa Speedway, to Cedar Rapids, drive to and from work every day with my knees in the dash of my car, and then drive to Davenport, Iowa, where my storage unit was. I had to do that for a week before I could put that thing up. It was too funny.
It was really, really, really just a lot. And just the sheer audacity of that was such an intact piece, and then you just nonchalantly just hit it behind our tent, I think was the heart, was just the real thing I was kind of wrapping my head around that during that entire experience. But one memory.
I just keep thinking about that day because that was so much fun and so funny.
God, and there were just times like that all the time. But something humorous that I will always treasure, a fond memory for me when I was at the Speedway. For those of you who don't know, I spent a lot of my high school years and early part of college working for the local radio station in Newton doing part-time broadcasts at the Speedway. So a colleague of mine named Greg, we would do pre- and post-race reports. We would get interviews with drivers every now and then, always interview the race winners. It was just a really cool part-time high school college job I got the opportunity to have. And the fact that it was in the same hometown as the Iowa Speedway, it just really worked out well. And so one of those years, it was 2012, right when Travis Pastrana was starting to dip his toes into the stock car realm, try to give NASCAR a try, and he was running the races at the Iowa Speedway for the K&N Pro Series. And while kind of doing my rounds, you know, trying to see what drivers I could run into for our Friday race, I bumped into Pastrana on his way out of the media center, and I asked him if he'd be a part of the podcast. And it was one of the few interactions I had with a driver where I didn't have to go through the PR rep. I got to talk to the driver directly. And, you know, I was like, oh, this is Travis Pastrana. He's probably got a lot on his plate right now. He probably doesn't want to talk to local media. On a dime, the man just goes, yeah, sure, where you guys at? And I was probably 18 at the time, just kind of completely thrown off. I was like, we're just actually on the other side of the media center, sir. He goes, okay, great, lead the way. So I'm walking him over to our tent, and to kind of help you paint the picture here, folks, for those of you not familiar with the Iowa Speedway, when you tune into the race broadcast and you see the Casey's General Store Victory Lane right dead center of the infield, if you look to the left, there's a big, long, rectangular, almost looks like a barn kind of building. That's the media center. And so the wall of the media center that's facing the Iowa Speedway Victory Lane, that was the wall that for the longest time you would always see in the race broadcast, a little tiny blue tent. And that blue tent was the racing radio company I worked for, KGRN Energy 106.7. So there's a little fun fact there. So that's where we're at, right there in the middle, right between the media center, right between Victory Lane. And so I'm leading Travis Estrada around the corner to go get him on air, because we did all reports live, and we were about to go live for that very next segment. And so my colleague Greg was actually at the very same time entertaining some guests from another competing local radio station from Marshalltown, just about 20 minutes to the south of us there in central Iowa. And so we're like, oh, yeah. So they're coming down to, you know, check out the competition. Like, oh, you guys are the peons. We're the big local station. We're the ones played over the loudspeakers. But yeah, here I come walking up. And so Greg just cuts off this guy. He goes, oh, wait, I think we have an interview. I'm sorry. And then I walk up kind of the rival radio company out of the way, like, out of the side. Big boys are over here playing. And so and I look over. About a minute into the radio interview, those guys kind of walked off, kind of all huffy. I'm like, yeah, that's right. This is where real talent hangs out. but no, it was one of the best interviews we ever had. He was such a really good personality, really laid back. And it was really a bummer for me that his career didn't pan out, because I thought he really could have brought a lot to the sport of NASCAR at that time. But no, that is a memory I will always hold on to, because it was super cool to meet a guy like Travis Estrada, someone who's made it, who's, you know, done literally anything you can think of, but has been completely unchanged by his fame, by his level of accomplishments, just literally the kind of guy who's just one of the boys out there on a Thursday night going to go, you know, go in for a dollar pitcher night at the local bar kind of guy.
And Travis Estrada is a driver that Brady knows, that I'm a huge fan of.
Oh, yeah, big fan.
And not even just that, like, for me personally, at that time, actually, it was probably about the same year. It probably was even the same race. At that time, my mother had passed away recently, and I was down in the dumps. My friend came up to the race with me. I was like, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I met Travis, and I freaked out because he was up top doing autographs. I'm like, oh, my God, it's Travis Estrada, blah, blah, blah. So got his autograph, got a photo, and went down, and my brother was a big fan of him, too. So I was like, oh, man, this is nuts, blah, blah, blah. And I called him, like, hey, do you mind talking to my brother? And my brother, I go, like, Nathan, you, and that's my brother's name is Nathan. I go, Nathan, you better, you know, stay on the phone. He goes, why? What you got? Because he's not impressed. And I'm like, just wait. And I go, here, Mr. Pastrana, you mind talking to my brother? He goes, yeah, hey, how's it going, buddy? I'm like, oh, this is cool. And if you, you know, if you think Travis is, you know, Brady said it best, Travis is that guy. His PR girl or his PR manager, whoever, hated him because he was so hard to just be like, come on, we have to go. We have to go. This is my favorite Travis Estrada story I have. It's from the Iowa Speedway. It's so funny because what had happened was Travis was racing for Jack Roush. This was the fall race or the last race of Xfinity that year for Iowa. And I'm just, you know, like, oh, this is cool, blah, blah, blah. Travis is, you know, coming out of the pits. I had wrote go fast and the number 60 on my hand. Anytime I'd see him, anytime I'd see the 60 car go out, I'd put my hand out, you know. So do that the entire day. Don't get to see him. I'm like, okay, cool. Okay, whatever. The next day, he's doing the autograph session. And I'm in line. I'm like, okay, cool. I got a skateboard because I wanted him to sign it. And I see him, and I still had, like, the go fast 60 on my hand. And I go, Travis! And I put my hand up, not even thinking, he makes a beeline to me, and he's like, yeah, I kept seeing your hand, blah, blah, blah. He signed my skateboard. I'm like, oh, and he's like, hey, let's get a couple pictures. I'm like, okay, Mr. Pastrana. It was
what?
So cool. It was just like, and people around me were just like, what's so special with this guy? What the hell? It was just so cool. And there's so many cool interactions at the Iowa Speedway. I tell people, if you've never been to a racetrack and you want to experience some great, not just racing action, but some great interaction with drivers, that's a great place to do it, is the Iowa Speedway, because not only do they do autograph sessions up top, you know, in the regular grandstand, they also have a big Chevy tent. I don't know if it's still there or not, but they'll have a Chevy tent.
Oh, they do.
Well, they'll have drivers. They do good. Well, they'll have where drivers will come up and talk to people, do autographs. But not just that. At the Iowa Speedway, they have this thing called the Fan Zone. And the cool thing about that is you pay a couple extra bucks, like $5 or something, and you get a wristband. And for the rest of the weekend, you can be down essentially in the pits and in the garage. Now, there are some places you cannot go. Trust me, I found out the hard way. But it was too late anyway, so. But you can, when drivers are going to and from their motor coaches, to and from the garages, from the garage to qualifying, you can legitimately catch them at so many different moments. It's amazing. And just the people you meet, too. They're some of the nicest people, for the most part, that track. And it's weird because the Iowa Speedway is not my first racetrack ever. It's not my first race I ever went to. Brady, do you know what track that is?
I want to say you went to Vegas for your first time, didn't you?
You're correct. I was 10 years old. I had a lot of family out in Vegas. And I was in the – was I in fourth grade or fifth grade? I was either in the fourth or fifth grade. And, you know, my mom was like, hey, you're going to come with me. We're going to Vegas. And I got to go to the race. It was my first race ever at the in real life. You know, I never went to Chicago. And to put in perspective, at this point, this was 2004. Yes. 2004, and you know, I had been a NASCAR fan all my life. The Iowa Speedway was not built or really had anything going for it, and I hadn't gone to Chicagoland, which was 2 hours, Road America, which was about 2.5 hours, Gateway, which is now I can't remember what it's called actually now, but you know, there was tracks around me, but we didn't go. Instead, oh yeah, we're gonna get on a plane for 4 hours and go out to a race instead. That was the first race I ever got to go to, and it was so interesting and so much fun. Now, the kicker is my first race that I ever got to go camp at, even, was Vegas 2 years later, and I got to meet my first ever NASCAR driver. Any guess on who that might be?
I have no idea.
That would be David Reagan when he was racing for Jack Rouse in the number 6 AAA car. And something very cool is not only did I get to ask him a couple questions, I even still to this day, it's back home in Illinois, but I still have it. They were giving out little cardboard stand-ups, probably about a little under a foot tall, and he had it and he signed it for me, and he signed it for everyone. I thought, wow, this is cool. And, you know, I'm still a David Reagan fan, even though he's, you know, quote-unquote retired. He is going to be, by the way, racing at Richmond in the truck series, whenever that race will happen now. But it's still one of my memories, one of my coolest memories of meeting a driver was David Reagan at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway when I was camping. And I was just, you know, I was 12 years old exploring, you know, the track and exploring all the, you know, attractions and everything. It was nuts. That was actually the year Jeff Gordon had that very scary crash into the safer barriers, if you remember that.
Ooh. 2008, yeah.
Yep.
Dang.
Yeah, it's so weird because, Brady, how many tracks have you been to personally?
Personally, as far as, like, tracks that hold NASCAR sanctioned events, I've only been to 3. I went to Kansas Speedway for the very first race after they did the repave back in 2012. That was also another first. I got an experience with my dad. We went down there. It was both of our first cup races. We had really good access. We got from a couple friends of ours. They gave us some tickets, and we were able to go into the infield, and then had some pretty decent seats right there off of turn 4, and it was a really good race. I don't know what it was about that repave and something about the Generation 5 car at the time. It just really took to the track really well. Matt Kenseth ended up being the winner, which I wasn't a big fan of at the time, but in hindsight, I've really grown to appreciate that I got to see what ended up being his last win for for Jack Roush. So that was really cool. I also got to see Danica Patrick completely fail at giving payback to David Ruderman in trying to crash in turn three. It was just probably, though, the biggest letdown of that event, though, was that was one of the two races that Dale Jr. had to miss that season for his concussion. And I was so disappointed because that was going to be my first time seeing Dale Jr. race in person, and I didn't get to see that happen. But so that was a bummer. But the other cup race I was able to attend was actually just a couple years ago, 2017. My girlfriend, Stephanie, who got major points for being just the amazing human being she is, she not only took me to see a cup race, but she took me to see a cup race that was on my birthday. The playoff race at Texas fell on November 5th, my birthday in 2017.
That's
so
right.
I got to see not only a cup race on my birthday, but it was a playoff race. It was also, thankfully, I got to see Dale Jr. race during that event. He didn't have the greatest event, but I still got to say I saw him race one time before he retired that year. So that was extra bonus points. So a really, really cool day. And then Kevin Harvick ended up winning the event that day, and that's a driver I've been following since 2001, you know, when he took over the Goodwrench car. So the fact that I got to see Harvick win in person, that was also really, really freaking cool. So that's a memory I'm going to always remember because it was with the woman I love very, very much, Stephanie. It was on my birthday, a driver I really like. I got to see him win and do a cool burnout. Plus, I got to see Dale Jr. drive in a NASCAR race. So it's a very fulfilling day.
I have a little bigger list than that.
Yeah, no, I need to get working on it. I've been to a lot of dirt tracks, but my NASCAR tracks are severely lacking.
So I'm going to try to go this in order. So my first racetrack, obviously, Las Vegas Motor Speedway. After that, it would be the Iowa Speedway. Then it would be Gateway in St. Louis, which is where actually I made my first ever start working in NASCAR, working for Norm Benning and Edwards Carl, something like that, in the 57 and the 75 truck. Then the next one would be Kansas City. Then I kind of didn't really go to – oh, nope, that's a lie. Chicagoland, I went there on my birthday and proposed. That obviously worked out well. Let's see. Then Then after that year, I worked only in Iowa. After then, I moved down here to the Carolinas. I went and worked at Road America. 2 weeks after I moved down from Illinois, I went straight back up to Wisconsin. Go figure. Darlington after that race. Went to Martinsville and Bristol are the other two tracks that I've been to for races. Two short tracks with a lot of history.
Very nice. Very good grouping there, too.
I technically have been to Charlotte, not for a race, but I have been there on the grounds and, like, walked around the track. Was there for a giant car show slash flea market where it was very interesting, very cool to be down there. It's weird to be at tracks when there's nothing going around. And I know
right.
You talked about, you know, how we were there when all the haulers left, but this was like really weird considering there was no NASCAR stuff, it was a flea market and there were some people selling NASCAR stuff, but it was just so weird seeing like it's you know, you're walking around and it's just like, where's the race cars at? It's a racetrack.
Actually, I have a really fun anecdote. When you get a minute too on abandoned racetracks and interesting experiences.
Well, I was going to say it's so weird for me because, you know, I've been to both coasts and the Midwest for races. I'm only missing going up to like New York, New Hampshire, Pocono. If I hit that, then I'll hit every region that the Cup Series racing.
There you go. You gotta work on that. That's a bucket list item right there for you.
On it, going to Pocono.
Well, so I mentioned I have a couple of anecdotes here. So the first anecdote is actually from this last summer. So a few friends of mine, we went over to Milwaukee because we were going to go take in a music festival over there. And it dawned on me that while we were there that
there used to be a very, very famous racetrack that NASCAR used to visit a couple times a year, especially in the then the Busch Series and Truck Series at the time, the Milwaukee Mile.
That's what I just was thinking.
And so I got my friends convinced that I was like, hey, would you mind if at some point during our trip there if we, you know, swung over there and saw it? And they're like, yeah, sure. So we pull up there, and it's connected to their fairgrounds. So not only did we show up to an abandoned racetrack, we showed up to an abandoned fairgrounds because it was, you know, during the off season. And it was just really weird because, like, we got to drive around it, you know, a lot more than I thought I figured we would have access to. And we were able to kind of really get a good look at the track. You know, we were able to walk up into the grandstand and kind of look out on the facility. And it was just so cool because I could just think of countless races upon races that were, you know, run at that track all the way up till 2009. Just the finishes, the dramatic moments, just the good classic short track racing. But, you know, just to be able to take that all in a very quiet, you know, abandoned, almost ghost town-like, you know, atmosphere. So it was really cool in a haunting kind of way. But the other one was the racetrack really wasn't abandoned, but Iowa Speedway for some reason had a random you know, event that they held for people in Newton or anyone who wanted to come on down to check it out. It was the Iowa Speedway Open House, where they literally opened up the entire track, you know, took people on tours. I got to go up in the flag stand and see what that felt like, you know, looking down on the track from that point of view. And part of that event, they were letting people drive their personal vehicles, their personal cars out on the track and, you know, making some hot laps. And so I got to drive my beater 1999 Grand Am around the Iowa Speedway for a few hot laps.
I remember that thing.
I went 8 laps at about 75 miles an hour. My dad still maintains to this day that's what did that poor Grand Am in. And you know what? He's probably right. That's probably what ended up cooking that engine for good. But, yeah, it was just one of the most oddest things I can say that I've been able to do. I was able to drive my piece of shit 1999 Grand Am around the Iowa Speedway.
That is awesome. And that is one of the things that is really cool about racetracks too. They will hold, a lot of them will hold these, you know, I guess the best way to put it is they will have these open houses to kind of show people what everything is doing or how, or even how stuff works. And I love that because it gives a generation of people who may not have been to a track or maybe have memories of the olden times of, you know, before electronic scoring and before, you know, these massive pit guns and all that. Before then, there's just like, yeah, we had to use a torque wrench and use this and that. And now it's just like, you got what? It's a cool thing. And I think one of my favorite things ever is, you know, especially at races that they'll have these stands where people can go up and look at actual race cars. They may not be actual cars that have been raced, but they might be, you know, retired race cars that they put a new body on, and people can look at them, even hop into them, you know, sit in the seat if they're able to. And one other thing is that they get to do is there are places that will do makeshift pit stop things. What would you call those? Pit stop stands, I guess?
I mean, like where they kind of like put on a pit stop, but it's not an actual pit stop.
No, so you would walk up and you would get a gun and they would let you change the four, or not change the four tires, but hit the five lugs, pull the tire off, but it's like still mounted and put it back on and reapply
the
tire.
Oh, those simulator things.
Simulator, that's the word. It's
yeah,
really
I know what
cool.
You're talking about.
That's
really
that
fun.
One of the things that, oh, dude, I love it. Because the one thing a lot of people don't understand, they're like, oh, I could do this. And then you see, like, you know, you see the guys do stop in 15 seconds, like, oh, I could do that faster. Then you get the guy that you know, bam, 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 bam. He takes it, puts it back on. And he's like, yeah, that's 15 seconds. Like, well, how did he do four tires? And then me being the person that, you know, done this before, they're like, you want to give it a try? I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, okay, this is what you're going to do. Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. Okay, okay, yeah, okay. And then it's like, bop! And I get it done in, like, in 5 seconds. They're like, how did you? I was like, oh, yeah, I work in NASCAR. Yeah, no, I know what I'm doing.
You're like, I'm a trained professional. Stand back, plebs.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. I'm about ready to NASCAR.
See, well, I think one of my favorite races that I do have to say of all time, for me, it's tough for me to say because not only have I been to so many, and a lot of them at the Iowa Speedway, I can't even count, and you're the same way. I don't even think you can count how many races you've been to there, right?
Oh, it's been easily in the dozens. I've been to so many of those events over the course of the years.
And not even just, like, the race weekends, but also both, like, both days. Like, if you count the races they have there, like, it's just nuts to think. But I'm trying to think. One of my favorite races I ever been to where I wasn't working, I think, was probably the SpongeBob 400 at Kansas Motor Speedway.
What an event.
That event had a lot of interesting things happen. There was rain that came into the forecast. That pushed the start time back just a little bit. It had some interesting driver changes, too. At that point, Kyle Busch had injured his legs early on that year, so he would have been out for a majority of the races. David Reagan stepped up and was racing all of his races. But then a young kid, you might know his name, like Eric Jones. Air Bear made his debut at Kansas Motor Speedway in the number 18. I think it was a Red Nose Day Toyota.
It was.
And then David Reagan moved over to Michael Waltrip Racing in the 55, which was sponsored by Aaron. And, SpongeBob himself was on the car.
All the SpongeBob advertising and paraphernalia, it'll haunt me for a while, I'm not going to lie.
Well, that race was very interesting and a lot of fun because, one, I got to see a bunch of people, see some friends, and also see some drivers, got to hang out with some people. But also, during that race, David Reagan spun out in the grass while it was wet and landed in the middle of the SpongeBob 400 logo, which I thought, this felt a little planned. Wait a minute.
Picture perfect.
Picture perfect.
I was going to say
there was another rain delay, but the race finished at like midnight, and there was so many people that got stuck in the mud. It was just such a fun and interesting weekend because I actually worked the truck race that weekend. That was the same weekend that Jimmy Johnson legitimately almost made me crap my pants, and I got hit on pit road by a truck.
Oof.
Nice.
Yeah,
did it hurt?
Weekend. A lot more than this tattoo did.
You know, I can imagine. I can imagine that not feeling the greatest, honestly.
but you kind of bring up a
nice segue. We've kind of talked about cool events, you know, and the tracks we've been to. But kind of going back towards the NASCAR theme as a whole, what are some races that stick out to you in your memory that maybe not races you've been to, but just races that you've witnessed on TV or that you remember fondly as sticking out to you from growing up?
Golly. One big one always for me was Gordon winning – what race was it? Oh, I'm blanking so hard. Or no, it was Johnson when he won that race, and he was told not to do a burnout because we had lost actually a lot of people from the Hendrick camp. A small plane had crashed – on its way to Martinsville, Virginia. Yeah, and we lost. That's a big one because I remember watching it, and anytime I'd watch a NASCAR race, I'm like, oh, boy, I get to see a burnout, and all you see is Jimmy Johnson just, you know, not do a burnout. I'm like, well, that's weird. And then they cut it to a couple interviews, then they cut it to motocross, and then they cut into motocross saying what had actually happened. I'm like, and I was a kid at the time. I was like, you know, that was the same year I went to Vegas. I was just like, okay, well, I don't understand that. But, you know, growing up and, you know, hearing about the tributes and seeing everyone talk about, you know, Ricky Hendrick and seeing all these other people talk about it, it's just like, wow. It's the impact when I was a kid was just like, that's weird. I didn't get to see, cars spin around and make a lot of smoke. And now it's just like, oh, now I understand. And there's been a lot of there's been a couple documentary series that have been about that race and about that incident, too, that was just so fascinating.
And honestly, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I remember being in the same position. I was right around 10 years old, 9 years old, somewhere where that happened. So old enough to kind of comprehend that something bad had happened, but not really quite old enough to know the sheer gravitas of what had transpired. Plus, at that time, I was getting just piecemeal, kind of information. So I didn't have the full picture of what exactly went on. I just knew that something bad had happened. But, now that I'm older and I've gotten this, go back and rewatch all the coverage from back then, rewatch, all the press conferences from back then, and, learned about the people involved with that accident, it really just drove home the gravitas that was lost on me when it happened in real time, but that I've been able to just kind of, understand more as I've become an adult and just really appreciate just how much Johnson, not only winning at Martinsville, during the incident, but then coming back the next week and him also winning the next week at Atlanta, the week after, we've kind of, got our bearings, kind of wrapped our head around the situation and started the grieving process and the moving forward. And honestly, that was the biggest thing that could have happened for the sport and for Hendrick Motorsports as a team, was getting a win that soon, right after the tragedy, to really start helping people to heal, to really start helping them to feel whole again, And it's just something I've been really appreciative of, that there's been a lot of good coverage and a lot of good, videos that I can go back and really educate myself on what was a really trying time for the sport right there in the fall of 04. But, some races that kind of stick out to me, I remember when I was a kid, I had a little VHS player in my room, and any races that I would miss or some of my favorite tracks like Daytona, Bristol and whatnot, I would take a little VHS blank tape and I would record the races, so that way I could always have races to watch when I was building Legos or, reading or writing or coloring in my room. And the races I would always go back and rewatch were races that I remember there being a really cool looking paint scheme or cars that really stood out to me. So races of favorite of mine were always the Coca-Cola 600, because there's always the patriotic paint schemes, the July Daytona race, because there was always cool cars for that. And the one race I think I watched more than any of them growing up was the 2006 Pepsi 400. And it was, I really enjoyed, Dewart had a really, really good car that night. And I really liked the look of the orange and black Home Depot car at the time. So I liked it for that part. But the main reason I always tuned into that race was Jimmy Johnson was running a SeaWorld car and had this beautiful, like, ocean blue bottom, a kind of sky blue top with Shamu on the hood and on the two-quarter panels. And for some reason, I just loved that car.
I would
watch that race repeatedly just so I could see him race the damn Shamu car. And, I did the same thing with the 07 Chevy Rock and Roll 400 at Richmond, where Dale Jr. ran the Elvis Presley car, because that car was just unbelievably good looking. It was all white, had the beautiful black DEI pinstripes, had the king on the hood of it, beautiful red Budweiser lettering. Oh God, I loved that car. So that was another race I always watched a lot. But that's kind of something I really feel bad for the kids nowadays, is that these days teams, they change their paint schemes like they change my underwear, and it's really, you don't have a team that kind of establishes a certain look that you look for each week. And, alternate paint schemes or special paint schemes, they aren't the thing they used to be, where you really looked forward to those one-off paint schemes because they truly were a one-off and you weren't spoiled, with them being constantly something new every week. And so I feel bad, that we don't get that anymore, because that was something I really looked forward to. And now it's just kind of a, just a part of the changing times. Well, we afford a season-long sponsor, so here's 20 different paint schemes you're going to see throughout the year,
That is true. Although there is a couple of times where we see really, really special paint schemes. Always Memorial Day weekend, 4th of July weekend, and Darlington for the throwback. So, we still do get we get interesting schemes where it's just like, okay, it's a new sponsor. That's a good-looking car. It's interesting. But we always get the patriotic and the really cool throwbacks, Memorial Day, 4th of July, and Darlington week, which – I can appreciate, because at least then teams are going to try to do something outside of the box and do something crazy and do something beautiful. And I always give them appreciation for that, because I love, and I do mean this, I love seeing those specialty paint schemes like that.
I especially love the throwback weekend too.
Oh, yeah. That and going, and by the way, going to Darlington is a trip on its own. I wasn't able to stay for the Cup race when I was working the race, but it was just so cool to be there and see, you know, all these Xfinity cars and even the Cup cars, you know, going around the track, which is so cool.
Bucket list time.
I think another, another race for me. Another race for me is when Joey Gase, and he's a local driver to Iowa, he got a fifth-place finish at Talladega for Jimmy Mean back, golly, I can't even remember how long ago.
Like,
but that's the race that people...
2013, 14, somewhere in there?
Something like that, yeah. And people are always like, well, I don't understand why that's significant. I'm like, and I tell them the same thing. You know, that's a guy, first off, he's like the local hero. He's from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. He's from, you know, he's local, and I've met him several times. He's a great, you know, he's a cool guy. You know, he's really smart, really just a good racer too. But he was able to take a car that you normally don't even see in the top, even in the top 20, barely even see him in the top 30 most times, and was able to take it to a fifth place finish. And just the interview, the post race, you could feel him just being thankful for it, because he said in there, you know, a lot of these teams, what they spend in one race, we use for an entire season. It's those underdog stories that always get me and will always make me remember races. Another big one for me was Michael McDowell. There's two races. It was Daytona a couple of years ago with Joey Logano, and then Homestead. It was the last year, it was the year that they ran. I think it was the year he won Road America, because it was Homestead. He was in the 59 car and he finished 10th.
Oh yeah,
Levine Family Racing.
2016,
like,
yeah.
Just those, yeah. It was just a crazy year for that.
And those are the moments that we always look to in sports. You know, the underdog stories, the true come out of nowhere moments. You think Trevor Bayne, 2011. You think Derek Cope.
Oh, yeah.
1990 in the Daytona 500, you know, just all these great names. And actually some of those moments kind of ended up in our vintage preview that we're going to be talking about a little bit later in the show. Just these moments that you look to in time that you really like, wow, that was truly a historic moment. So one moment I love to relive it every now and then. I actually just rewatched the race here a couple of weeks ago. The 2012 Daytona 500. Now, that is one I'm always going to remember, because that was my senior year of high school, so that was always my senior year day, 1200. And just everything about that event was just so unorthodox, you know, the being a Monday night event, which I still don't think any race I've ever watched can equal just the level of hype of a Monday night Daytona 500, just the light, the prestige, you know, I'm not a football fan, but even hearing the Monday night football theme as they came in from break, you know, to get to go green for that race, even that was just beyond hype. And then the racing action was intense. The racing was great. And then you had Juan Pablo Montoya smacking the jet drive, creating a completely bizarre situation. Brad Keselowski tweeting a picture from his car, just all these things. And the fact that it was also such a big personal time in my life too, being my final year of high school, like just all those things just culminated just a really special fond memory that I can always look back on. Like, wow, I will always remember where and when when and where I was watching what was probably the most historic 500 easily to date.
For sure. I mean, that is a race I sometimes forget about, but that's because the Daytona 500 is prestige. It's known for everything. It wasn't run. Like, there was no racing action that Sunday. And then the race was supposed to start at noon on Monday. Well, it was still raining. So then they're like, ah, screw it. We'll do it a night race on Monday night. It's like, okay, let's see where this could go. And just like you said, green flag, start of the race. And there's actually a whole hour-long doc. I know it's on YouTube because that's where I've watched it a couple times. That talks about that race in particular. And just like the interviews with drivers, you know, the start of the race, there was that big wreck that took out Jimmy Johnson and Danica Patrick, a bunch of other people. And in that doc, Jimmy talks about how he was leaving the track and he got on the airplane and he was flying back. And all of a sudden he saw Fireball come out and he's like, what the hell happened there? The jet dryer. And then a big story behind with that was at that point, too, David Blaney, like Ryan Blaney's father, who was racing for Tommy Baldwin Racing, that team that had literally nothing to anything to their name, was leading. And if, and this, and that was a big thing that they were saying, if he wins, that would be the first victory, not just for that team, but for a lot of those guys. And it was
and Dave
not
himself,
to see.
Sure.
Yeah, and Dave himself. And you know, there was a bunch of conversation going back and forth whether the race was going to continue or not, because they were worried that some of the asphalt had actually melted and damaged the track. And then there was interviews with drivers, and you said Brad Keselowski tweeted. That blew up the internet. That blew up NASCAR and Twitter, and then implemented a new rule saying you cannot have your phone in the car at the race in the race car during the race. And just like Tommy Baldwin even said this during an interview, he's like, "Well, if we do win, hopefully we can get some parts off that because it needs to go onto our car that's going up to Atlanta after this race." It was just such a that golly, I can't believe I forgot to mention that race. Because that and the 2011 race are two back-to-back memorable races, because you have the Trevor Bayne Cinderella story, second start ever win, and then you got that historical craziness. I don't even remember who won that 500.
Matt Kenseth, he won his second 500 that night.
That's right, he did. It just was nuts, and we did, and you did mention that. We might as well hop into that because we have about 20 minutes left in the show. So because we don't have any racing action, we thought we'd do a retro rewind. And it's going to be this. We're going to mention some races. We're going to watch one a week because obviously that's all, you know, even though we would get 3 to 4 races a week with this action, we're going to keep it to one. So we can really hammer home some important either events or some really cool actions that had taken place during this race season, or during this race, I should say. And they're not just going to be like, you know, races from today or yesterday or last week or even like the Daytona 500 from 2011. In fact, there's going to be 2 Daytona 500s on here. There's going to be a race at Auto Club Speedway, a race at Talladega, and a race at Bristol. The first race we're going to talk about, and this is going to honor Jimmy Johnson, getting his first win at Auto Club in 2002. It was his first full-time season in the 48 car. So we thought that would be something very cool, was to see his first ever win at Auto Club Speedway, and his first win in general. The second race is going to be the fall Talladega race. Now, this race is important because it plays a major part in...
Up 2009.
Up 2009, correct. Sorry. This plays a major part in safety because this is actually the race, and Brady pointed this out to me, that Ryan Newman crashed and slipped onto... was it Carl Edwards?
I think it was A.J. Allmendinger at the time. And I think he flipped onto A.J. Allmendinger's 43 at the time.
You're right. It was the 43. Where he flipped onto there, and NASCAR then made improvements to the car. We will talk about that, of course. The third race is going to be, I feel, one of the most historical Daytona 500s, and we'll talk about it when we watch it, but it's going to be the 1979 Daytona 500. This race has a lot of massive pieces of history, from a snowstorm snowing people in to... a young man named Dale Earnhardt something getting to race in the 500 and leading some laps, to a major fight happening on the infield with Ken Squire saying, what was it Ken Squire that said the famous words?
There's a fight down on the infield. They're tougher. They're playing.
Oh.
They have lost.
And
God, what is
the
wait?
God,
I thought
I can't.
That man, Ken
wait.
Squire, I am so happy that of all the sports that was blessed to have Ken Squire be one of their legendary journalists, that racing can claim that we had Squire, because, man, what a voice.
Not just what a voice, but what a way to call races, too. But not just that, that was also the king, Richard Petty's last Daytona 500, 7 for 7. Again, we'll go over a lot more detail, talk about the racing action. And by the way,
and one other thing on that, it's also kind of timely with that, you know, being most of the people that tune in for the 79 500, they couldn't go anywhere because of the snow. And, you know, with all this COVID, you know, pandemic, we're kind of like that. We're kind of quarantined and can't really go nowhere. So it'll kind of feel like that with those chilly months in 79.
Exactly. So the fourth race will be the 2007 Bristol Spring Race. Kyle Busch won that race. And what's so important about that race, you may be asking? Well, it's the first time we saw the car of the tomorrow, the COT car. The car with a odd front end and a spoiler that was a giant wing, something you would see on a, 1997 Honda Civic, because someone thinks this makes it go fast.
Brian France saw Tokyo Drift once. He goes, that's what I want.
I want that right there. and lastly, we will do the 1998 Daytona 500, Dale Earnhardt Sr.'s 20th attempt and his first ever or his only Daytona 500 victory. There's some great races on here. And the cool thing is you guys don't just have to be like, oh, I can't wait for them to talk about it. We want you guys to actually watch the races. Give us your input. Give us points. Interact with us on Facebook. Message us. Be like, hey, you know, I watched the race and this happened. Or, hey, I watched the race and this. Give us points. You know, message us. We'd love to hear some opinions about it, because that's the one thing about this that's going to be different from podcasts for the rest of the year, really, is that anyone can watch these. They're on YouTube. That's how, you know, I'm going to watch them, is watch them while I do some other work. And it's going to be cool. It's going to be really cool, because no matter what, even if you, you know, aren't a big race fan, this is something that can kill time if you have nothing else to do.
And this is one thing I really got to stress about the YouTube community for NASCAR. If you're a racing fan and you're like myself, facing self-quarantine during the COVID crisis and looking for things to occupy your time, there is just infinite content of NASCAR-related videos, either from, you know, old races to old documentaries to old, you know, old Speed Channel clips to old Race Hub clips to old even back-in-the-day NASCAR clips. To even, you know, fresh content from a bunch of, you know, up-and-coming YouTube stars who are making their YouTube fame just talking about NASCAR, doing like what we're doing, doing podcasts, you know, making racing reference stories. There's just literal, you know, hundreds of troves upon content that you can find on YouTube from racing enthusiasts just like us, just like yourselves. And so if you're looking for something to do, I highly recommend that. And if you're looking for if you're wanting to see, check out a couple of YouTubers, some of my personal favorites would include Black Flags Matters. That's a real tongue twister, but I really like his videos because he's got a couple of different genres. He's got NASCAR Bus, where he looks at a driver that was supposed to be a really hot up-and-coming prospect whose career kind of fizzled out and kind of went nowhere. He's also got championship seasons where he breaks down the driver's wins, what their average totals were, and some different highlights from that season. He also has the same kind of a mentality, but for bad seasons, where he analyzes a really good driver, but analyzes a really, really bad season in time. You know, you think of Jimmy Johnson in his 2019 or 2018 campaign, kind of those kind of videos. So he's got really great content. That's one of my favorites. Slap Shoes, he's on there. He's got a bunch of racing reference stories. Is it Slap Shoes?
Yeah, well, so one really interesting thing is actually Slap Shoes lives here in Greenville. I'm actually going to try to reach out with him soon to see if we can't do something. But he's actually really local here to Greenville. He's done if you haven't seen any of his YouTube stuff, one of his first reviews is actually about Greenville Pickett Speedway, which is just a mere 20 minutes away from me. He's actually blown up in the NASCAR YouTube world. He doesn't have a ton of videos. I'm actually going to look him up real quick to tell you. He's at 57,000 subscribers, but he only has, you know, not a lot of videos. He's been making videos over a year now, and he actually just posted one a couple days ago. I have not seen, actually, talking about his predictions or his proposal for a possibility for the 2021 season. But he has a lot of interesting stuff on here that, like you said, talks about the birth and the death of speedways, goes in depth knowledge about certain races.
The
Rise talks...
of the Wall videos he does are really good.
Oh yeah. Another big one is he actually breaks down races, like you said. A big one he actually talked about that we will talk about, maybe we can actually get him on for this race, is the 1979 Daytona 500. It's just cool. This guy, he's made a lot of stuff, and I'm right there with you. I was actually about to say Flap Shoes myself because he's such a fantastic NASCAR YouTuber.
Oh, yeah. The Iceberg, also another really good one. I just found one that I've just been kind of – I just started perusing through his videos right before we came on air, Jesse King. He's got a couple of really cool racing reference stories that I was able to watch. And I've mentioned his user domain for, like, different stories if you wanted to, like, look up racing stories and read about them. Racing Reference is definitely the place to go. But the person behind RacingReference.com, NASCAR Man, he's also got a really great Twitter. He also has a YouTube page that's just a treasure trove of vintage clips, vintage, you know, in race, like, updates, you know, just little driver specials. So if you like vintage clips and you just want the old vintage NASCAR content where they're talking to drivers, you know, behind the scenes and getting just a little journalism, you know, beat reporting kind of writing, definitely hit up NASCAR Man's page because he's got all kinds of events, including one that really caught my attention. It was the, I can't remember what the exact name of it, but it was, you know, hearken to the senior tour of PGA golf. You know, the senior tour is only open to age 65 older, and it was open to racing legends from all forms of motorsports, kart, F1, NASCAR, you know, sprint car, World of Outlaws, drag racing, and it was a seniors only tour, and the cars were all provided by Jaguar, and it was just this really odd concept, but it was so cool to see drivers like Bobby Allison, you know, out there. David Hobbs, the legendary driver turned broadcaster, he was a part of that. Paul Newman was in this series. It was just all these like geriatric 65-year-old guys out there rubbing fenders and just out basically looking like they hadn't missed a beat, you know, beating doors and just turning really fast laps in these multi-million dollar Jaguars. Literally the epitome of the 90s summed up in motorsports right there. But
I got one more that's a good one. I just had him. Where'd he go? There he goes. Danny B. Talks. Now, he's I think he's in Tennessee. He definitely has that thick accent. I didn't tell you this video sponsored, you know, they were sponsored by Burger King. Like, his accent's really thick, but he's actually a really great YouTuber, and he has a lot of different stuff. He actually made some videos of him going to the Daytona 500, of him going to Bristol races, him going to a lot of different stuff. But he also does these cool series called The Rise and Fall about teams and even drivers. But one of my favorites that he does on there is where NASCAR, five NASCAR drivers you forgot about. And there's some really good ones on there that that are just, it's incredible to see. I love, and that's one thing too, while we'll wrap this YouTube stuff up, but we'll redo the races real quick that we're going to watch. The one thing I do love about the YouTube community in NASCAR is that there are so many young guns that are now getting media passes because they have a YouTube channel with a decent following. Joseph LeBon, who I follow, I'm friends with on Facebook, who sponsors Ryan Thieg, actually, and his team. He gets credentials. Black Flag Matters gets credentials for races and actually press passes. It is very cool to see that, and it's very cool to see this community grow because it's not just like four or five people. There's dozens upon dozens. There's people that have, you know, 10,000 plus subscribers, people with 500, 600, even 1,000. They're still trying to grow, but there's a community there that will definitely give not just content, but actually can point you. Hey, actually, here's a great one. Flap Shoes. He did a thing about the lost Speedway. What was it? It was the one here in Greenville, actually. Air Force Speedway, I believe it's called. Right, Brady? And he put out these bounties and these things. Like he said, hey, if you have information, $25 gift card for this, $25 gift card for this. You just got to give me proof. And he made like 3 videos on it. And it was nuts. It not just blew up, you know, here in Greenville, South Carolina, but it blew up across the nation. It's just like, whoa, what's this? Even people, Dale Jr. even talked about it at one point. He was like, hey, Slapshoots guy talked about this racetrack I didn't even know about. And it was nuts. One thing I want to kind of interject real quick
before we kibosh the YouTube thing. The thing I really like about the YouTube community is that NASCAR is embracing it. NASCAR is really taking a progressive approach with their approach to social media. They encourage, you know, the YouTube community to come out there to report on races. They encourage Instagrammers like myself, who has my Instagram account that covers NASCAR races, to create this content, because they're recognizing that it's just free revenue for them, and content like this reaches that target demographic for them that for the bulk of the 2000s and 2010s, they were really missing, that 18 to 35-year-old and even the younger category with this Gen Zers, you know, later teenage years, you know, trying to get these fans young and, you know, trying to get young people attracted to the sport. And the best way they can do that is to let the people find it where they're going for their content. And so by encouraging these drivers and, you know, these YouTube stars to come out to the tracks and start covering the sport, and by encouraging, you know, that aspect of the social media realm, they're engaging with that core target demographic that they've been missing for all these years. And I just really applaud NASCAR for taking a progressive approach with that and not, you know, kiboshing what is a really, really good opportunity for the sport to grow.
For sure. So, to reiterate, because there is no racing action, we are still going to do a show. We are going to be recapping, or we're going to rewatch races, and we'd like you guys to follow along. So, the list again, and we will surely be posting this, and this will be one race a week. The first race will be Auto Club 2002, Jimmie Johnson's first ever win in the NASCAR Cup Series. The second race will be the Fall Daytona, or Fall Daytona, no. The Fall Talladega race, it was the AMP. Brady, you're going to be the guy for the name for a couple of these races.
The AMP Energy Drink 500.
And that would be our second race. That will be after Auto Club. The third race, I don't need the title for that one. The 1979 Daytona 500. Then following that will be the 2007 Bristol Spring Race, which was?
The Food City 500.
Oh, really? I'm just so used to seeing that thing at night, I guess, for some reason.
No, the night race in 07 was the Sharpie 500.
That's right. You're right. And then following that will be the 1998 Daytona 500, which was the race Dale Sr. finally won the elusive Daytona 500 trophy. So, with that being said, we still have a show. The Fantasy League is still going on. It's just on hold.
Here's the thing about the Fantasy League.
Oh, boy.
Todd can't get any farther ahead of me right now.
These are facts.
Well,
one thing I think we need to mention is while NASCAR is suspended right now, tentatively through May 3rd is when they're going to pick up racing events, NASCAR has said that the intent is to run all 36 events for this year. Scheduling is going to be kind of iffy, and there's really no clear-cut picture on how that's going to look or if it's going to affect the 10-race playoffs. But Steve Phelps has said that the industry is committed to running all 36 events whenever we can get the racing season started, which tentatively is slated to return to action May 3rd with the spring Martinsville race, which is going to be a night race for the first time in that Speedway's history. So hopefully we get that in, because that's going to be a very historic event that I personally cannot wait for and would be really bummed out if I have to wait a little bit longer for what's going to be one of my most anticipated racing moments in recent memory.
All righty.
Trust me, I'm right there with you.
Well, guys, we got 60 seconds, just enough time to say goodbye, and we'll see everybody next week on the Charlotte Line. Sound good, Brady?
Yes. Sounds good. Everyone be safe out there. Please listen to the scientists out there and the CDC officials. I know it sucks. I know this is not what we want, but you can't think about yourself right now. Think about those around you who might be affected by this. And so just do your due diligence, use your smarts, and just be safe out there.
Zach, you got 10 seconds.
2002 Auto Club Speedway. Watch that race. We will talk about it next week. Goodbye.
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 I thought you said 10 seconds.
I did. I was wrong.
Well, look at that.
Well, come on.
You look like professionals.
Where is it?
Here
Where's
now?
The British lady?
Okay.
Hopefully she's gone. She annoys the crap
there
out of
she
me.
Is. There she is.
Where? I don't hear.
She just said 10 seconds. Thank you.
No. No. Guys, we swear, if you're listening still to this point, we are professionals-ish.
I'm not.
Sure. Good night, everyone.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.